In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, February 21st, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, in our industry chatter spotlight, it is the development world. A little bit different, a little bit of a change of pace today. My guest is Kathleen Flanagan. She's President and Chief Executive Officer of Apt Associates. Thank you very much for being here today, Kathleen. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Happy to do it. Tell me about your company and what you do and the agencies that you work with.
So Apt Associates partners with a very broad range of government clients. So we do work around the world. A lot of it here in the U.S., which is about every government agency. And our job is to partner with our agencies to help them design, evaluate, and implement the important programs that they work on every day.
What's kind of the state of the art with that right now? What are the agencies telling you that are their priorities when it comes to managing programs?
The state of the art is evidence-based decision-making and policies. The state of the art is innovation. It is thinking outside of the box, solving their most difficult problems, may sound a little self-serving, but we're told often that we're very easy to work with. So we've got to be flexible, got to be creative, and again, you know, innovation, especially as we look forward, is going to be the key.
So I'm going to guess when you're talking about evidence-based decision-making that you're positioning yourselves as a company right in the middle of the big data wave that agencies are trying to figure out how they can make it work for them.
Right. We use the data that exists around each of the programs. We also collect data ourselves. We have a very robust data collection capability. We do surveys, telephone and in person and on the web. But we also bring together a mix of substantive experts, methodological experts, to look at the data and think about how do we help them tweak programs? How do we help them implement them more effectively? How do we really have an impact on the cost effectiveness and the the execution of these programs?
It's my sense that agencies have a pretty decent handle on the data that they have. It's the analytics part that they're still not struggling to figure out because they're really smart people doing really smart work, but just maybe conceptually understanding all of the things that are possible with the information that they're collecting.
Right.
That seems to be a big challenge right now. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, and I think they look to places like Apt Associates to really help them think about how best to analyze the data, what to make of it, mm-hmm. How to make sure that they're getting value for the money that's invested in the programs.
Is there are there best practices for something like that, for even figuring out what it is that you want to know? Because with some of the agencies are telling me, we're just overwhelmed by the idea of what we can possibly comb out of this data, and that's mm-hmm. That's at a very high level. That's not even necessarily close to a particular program. Is that something that you're experiencing, and are there best practices to try to work through that?
When we think about evaluating the impact of a program, mm-hmm. The best practice is using what we call randomized control trials.
Okay.
So we're expert at that. It's really using random assignment to evaluate the impact of a program. When we think about the very large scale portfolio of implementation work that we have around the world, we think about how to partner best with the governments of developing countries, how to think about fitting programs most successfully into their cultures and into their day-to-day life. So it really depends on the type of intervention, if you will, or the type of program that we're working on. But using best practice, using evidence base is really the key.
Give me a couple examples where that approach was successful in helping an agency. You don't have to name the agency if you don't want to or anything like that. But a couple of ideas so that somebody can understand who maybe isn't familiar with this concept, how it works and how it helps somebody get to a better result.
With the randomized control trial concept.
Yeah.
We apply it all over the federal government right now. But one example might be in the context of a work program.
Mm-hmm.
Our people's if we implement a work program, does it help people get engaged in the workforce, and does it have them earning more? So when you randomly assign folks to the treatment, maybe it's a job training program or the control group, mm-hmm. does the treatment have an impact in their wages and their connection to the workforce?
Okay, so it's a pretty straightforward process at evaluating success. What are the markers that most people are looking for, though? Are they always that clear cut when it comes to trying to decide success or failure?
I think generally they are, really. Are people more educated? Are people finding jobs and higher wages? Are people does the program work mm-hmm. and get the outcomes that it's intended to?
Mm-hmm. The agencies that are coming to you for a variety of these services, what are the questions that they're asking you right now? Obviously, they know what you do. They know what you can provide. But what are the things that they want to know about how you can help them, or when they say, we have this set of challenges, that kind of thing?
They ask us what kinds of methodologists we have at Apt Associates and mm-hmm. how creative are they? How innovative can they solve the toughest problems? They ask us what kind of substantive breadth is there? We have people that are experienced running programs like the ones that they're working on. Do we understand the importance of quality and quality analysis and quality data? So those are kind of the keys to what they're looking for.
Now, innovation is a word that we hear all the time in a lot of different contexts in the government. We hear it so often that it's become a buzzword now, mm-hmm. and people use it to mean any number of different things. When an agency says they're looking for an innovative solution, is it hard to get a sense of what that means for that particular environment based on, I mean, because everybody wants innovation now, it seems like.
I don't think it's been tough for us. The way that we think about innovation at Apt Associates is quite disciplined. I mean, we really were, as I noted, we're very broad and we work in 40 countries around the world. Our objective is to take that experience, that evidence-based experience for a whole broad range of clients, and put it to work for each of the clients. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we have a client technology center at Apt now that draws on all of the experiences across projects that we work on for the clients and tries to make it a capability that can be efficiently and effectively employed regardless of the program or the client. So how, when there's cost pressures right now, when our customers are saying, we have to do more with less, how can you think out of the box for me? What can you bring from the whole portfolio of your work to solve our most complex problems, to make sure that we understand the evidence and can design or tweak a program to make it most effective.
How has that interaction with agencies changed over the last, say, year, 2 years, 5 years, then compared to now?
I think it's all about a partnership. You know, our objective is to work hand in glove with our clients. They bring a certain set of experience and capabilities, and we add to that in a complementary way to get to the right solution.
Yeah.
So I think, it's flexibility, creativity, ease of working together, becoming a trusted partner, and that collaboration is key to success. And I think it's going to become even more important as budgets get tighter and things that, you know, the whole environment gets tougher, but mm-hmm. you still have to deliver.
Yeah. The reason I ask that is because it sounds like the areas that you're working in are exactly some of the areas of emphasis that the administration has worked on, driving costs down, especially through chasing improper payments and that kind of thing. Some of the other things money-wise. And it strikes me that using data to drive to measure results in performance improvement officers jobs and so on seems to me that that's right in the wheelhouse of what you're doing, and that's why I'm curious if there's any more or less emphasis on different areas of the ways that you've worked.
No,
with agencies.
I mean, I think our expertise does align with the priorities of the administration right now. Huge emphasis on a health portfolio that we have, mm-hmm. infectious disease, HIV programs. What are the best practices in prevention of HIV as well as the treatment of HIV, for example? So we do, our capabilities fit squarely in the interests of the government right now. But I think, again, it's all about working collaboratively to get the outcomes that, that the client needs, the refinements of the program. When they have limited investment to make, they have to make sure that their programs are working and that's and that they're implemented effectively in developing countries, for example, or that they actually work and get the outcomes that they want.
One of the things that I noticed, to take a quick break, but one of the things I noticed from your website is that you have employees all over the world and you're involved in government efforts all over the world. I want to talk about what that looks like in the time that we live in now when we come back. Kathleen Flanagan is my guest. She's the President Chief Executive Officer of APT Technologies. That's ABT Tech, Associates, excuse me. And we'll continue our conversation in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
The federal debt limit extension deal passed by Congress assures the federal government will not default on its loans through mid-May. But military budget experts say the extension deal could also increase the chances of sequestration. In the continuing budget fight, both parties are so well entrenched in their opposition of other alternatives, such as tax increases or entitlement cuts, it's possible that sequestration may be the least common denominator between the two parties. Sequestration could have a negative impact on jobs, the nation's economy, and essential government services.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. The men and women of NACA run the safest, most efficient aviation system in the world. And last year, we had the safest record in aviation history, moving nearly 750 million passengers through our nation's airspace. Next time you get on a plane, remember that air traffic controllers are the professionals guiding you home in the safest airspace in the world. Visit us at natca.org, NACA.org.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
The military and the Coast Guard are extending certain benefits to same-sex partners of service members. Identification cards and access to commissaries are among the 22 different benefits that will now be offered. DOD did not, however, extend important housing and health care benefits to gay and lesbian couples due to current federal law. The military has until October 1st to put the new rules into effect.
Does your spouse need additional or less expensive life insurance coverage? WEPA's Associate Member Program allows spouses of civilian federal employees to become associate members and apply for coverage up to $750,000. And the good news is that you, as the federal employee, are not required to purchase any insurance, and your spouse does not need to be a federal employee. To learn more, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. Quick, name a technology that can save lives, help you find money, and cut crime. Hear about the latest landmark study in big data. And now that the polar ice cap is melting away, there's a lot more movement near the roof of the world. Shipping, tourists. And that's all got NORAD taking a closer look at the potential security problems. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Kathleen Flanagan, President Chief Executive Officer of APT Associates. And you mentioned, we talked a little bit before the break, that you have employees all over the world. How many countries are you working in right now?
We're currently in about 40 countries.
And in those countries, the vast majority of your employees, almost all of them, it looks like, are from that country. What's the benefit there, and how has that process changed over the last several years? Because that's, I don't know about your company, but for many companies, that wasn't an emphasis for a long time.
Right. So there's been a real shift at that USAID and other donor organizations, DFID in the UK, AusAid in Australia, to make sure that the development work that they fund results in sustainability and capacity building in the countries that we do work in. So there's been a big emphasis called USAID Forward in making sure that we staff our projects overseas with local nationals, that we work directly with the various ministries to build capacity and ultimately work our way out of a job. That's our goal.
Mm-hmm. And by that, you mean go in, do what you need to do, it's successful, and your services
leave
aren't
behind the capabilities to run successful
for the local
folks. Enhanced services.
To do it on their own, essentially. What's USAID tells Congress on a regular basis, we need more resources, we're short on people, that kind of thing. Does that manifest itself in the way that you work with the organization? Do you see any of the impact of the budget situation that aid has on when you collaborate with them?
I don't think it's any more severe than any other agency. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all doing more with less. And I think there's a real commitment of the U.S. government in their diplomacy initiatives to make a connection to developing countries and make sure that we can provide that capacity building and stability that's needed in a number of those countries, especially those that are post-war.
Is developing a locally based workforce more difficult, different to do than developing a workforce if you were going to do it here, or if you were going to take people and drop them in there, as a lot of companies did in the past when they would do aid projects?
I think it's been amazingly easy. I mean, there's a number of incredibly qualified and well-trained people in each of these countries. So we've been tapping into that labor force, working to attract and retain the best and the brightest, develop them. I think our challenge as a U.S.-based company has really been making sure that we can connect them back, that we can connect everybody around the world. There's 2,500 of colleagues that I have around the world, almost half overseas. So making sure that we connect them to the mission of the company, that we can leverage the best practices that we use in each of these countries, that we're a learning organization, and sort of, again, communicating and connecting them back in so they feel part of the company and attached to our overall goals and objectives has been a real priority for us.
What are some of the major areas within some of the focuses we talked about that you're working? You mentioned health programs, and you got your start on a housing program a while back. What are some of the other areas where your company's really heavily focused right now?
So again, we do everything from education to healthcare to workforce to climate change and agriculture. Overseas, mm-hmm. most of our work is in the area of healthcare, health systems, infectious disease, as well as agriculture and climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that we improve markets and systems for farmers, making sure that we provide them with training and capacity building to improve their ability to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
We were working on climate change issues, flooding and some of the drought and other issues that are prevalent, especially in Africa and in the developing world. We're working on malaria. Very big initiative that we are collaborating with the president's initiative on malaria that we're working in 17 different countries in Africa to reduce the incidence of malaria.
What's the reception like when you go into an area where maybe you haven't worked before, or maybe even the United States hasn't worked before? And we hear about how our reputation is around the world and so on. What do you find when you go into some of these places?
We find the reception to be quite positive. And I think, you know, it's important that we are staffing and implementing these programs with local nationals primarily. They understand the culture. They understand the issues most of, effectively. So it isn't a bunch of Americans going in trying to tell them what it should be like based on our experiences. It's really collaborating with and leveraging the incredibly bright and talented workforce in that country to fit it to the needs of that country.
Kathleen Flanagan is the president, chief executive officer of Apt Associates. And you can read more about that company at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. My conversation with Kathleen will be posted later this afternoon. We'll continue it in just a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What you don't know about federal pay, benefits, and retirement can cost you. Get the answers you need with a free publication from NARF, the experts on federal retirement and benefits. Download FAQs about your federal benefits today at fedfaqs.org. NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, unravels the most complex rules and requirements feds encounter. Download your free guide today at fedfaqs.org. That's fedfaqs.org.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Jenny Mattingly sits down with the Federal Managers Association and John Matone to discuss leadership development for federal managers.
Register now for AFSEA's 12th Annual Homeland Security Event, February 26th through 28th at the Grand Hyatt, Washington. Focusing on working together, keeping the nation safe, this is the venue where you'll hear firsthand about the critical issues facing our country, including cybersecurity, critical infrastructure protection, identity management, information and intelligence sharing, emergency management, mobile communications, and more. Speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry will participate. And contractors and agencies will showcase the latest security products and solutions in the exposition. New this year is a small business matchmaking symposium. This event is proudly sponsored by AT&T, InfoZen, Kinetic North America, URS, and Verizon. Register to attend or exhibit at www.afcea.org, keyword homeland. That's AFCEA.org.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only and best food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, February 24th, we'll be talking with new chef Andrew Merkert. He is opening up his restaurant, Bouchart. He's working with lots of area farmers, and he's bringing some in. And the Capital Wine Festival is back. I believe we'll be tasting some wine.
I believe we will. That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday at 11, right here on 1500 AM.
A few minutes a meal. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Researchers say families who spend a bit longer together at the dinner table tend to have kids with a bit better weight. Barbara Fies of the University of Illinois saw it in data on low-income families. In the study, researchers observed 200 family meal times. They say the difference was only 3 or 4 minutes. Families with healthier weight children spend about 20 minutes at the table. But Feast says the minutes add up, and family time may reduce mindless eating when the calories go in without people really thinking about them.
They mean that families are sort of keeping track of what their kids are doing. They're also monitoring what they're eating.
The study in the journal Economics and Human Biology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington. Great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My industry chatter conversation with Kathleen Flanagan of Apt Associates continuing. And Kathleen, there are a tremendous number of challenges in the areas that we've talked about so far in the prairie. What's the hardest thing that you're finding in dealing with your government clients right now? What makes your job toughest of all of the things that you're working on?
Well, our objective is always to partner again with the client so that together we figure out the best solutions to the problems or the opportunities that they're faced with. I would say as budgets shrink, our clients are more and more likely to take risks with solutions, understanding that we can't do business as usual, right? They have to do more with less. We're able to bring them more innovative solutions and have them try things more willingly.
I want to come back to that risk idea a little bit, but the more with less concept, how is that manifesting itself? Is it only dollars, or is it also showing up in agencies wanting to use fewer resources, manpower resources, or other kinds of resources also?
I think it manifests itself in organizations like App being pushed to come up with more efficient ways to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it comes back to leveraging all of the experiences across our client base and saying, hey, we're going to show you something that's been tried somewhere else, and we think it's got promise here. May not be what you're used to doing, but we've got to move out of, kind of the business as usual box and into something that's a little more creative.
Now, the idea of agencies being willing to take more risk now is kind of, I think it's counterintuitive. It's not what I would have expected you to say. I would have expected you to say people are really circling the wagons and don't want to go out on a limb because they want to make sure that whatever it is that they're going to try is going to work, so that that money doesn't appear to have been spent in a bad way. That's particularly fascinating.
Well, I think it plays out in a couple ways. I think the client will ultimately like to work with an organization or a set of partners that they know can get the job done for them, right? There's a certain comfort level and experience level there. On the other hand, with the budget situation the way it is, they need to move out of their comfort zone in terms of what they're willing to try. So I think the risk profile is not about sort of willy-nilly, being risky, but instead it's saying, show me what else is in your toolkit that mm-hmm. I might not have seen before. Show me that it's worked somewhere else, and let's figure out how we adapt it to maybe be successful in our environment.
And you're not the first industry leader or agency official to say, this might turn out to be an opportunity for us to break out of that you're talking about, of we've always done it this way, so we'll continue to always do it this way. That's something that a lot of agency leaders have wanted to get out of the business of for a long time, and this is becoming a driving force behind that. Is that how you're seeing it?
Yeah, I think there's real opportunity there. Yeah. I think we're being encouraged to show them more options. I think it gets labeled as innovation, but honestly, for a company like ours that's very broad in its base of clients and in the substantive and methodological breadth that we bring to the table, I think there's huge opportunity for us to, again, leverage from one place in the government to another our experience, our best practice, the evidence-based work that we're doing.
When you go into a project and you approach something, are you normally going in at the beginning, or are you coming in sometimes in the middle where somebody's saying to you, we're running into some situations we didn't expect and we'd like you to help us fix them?
A little bit of everything. You know, we love to come in at the beginning, love to start out, kind of without having to fix anything, but we do all of it.
When you come in the middle of something, is there any consistency to what you find when you get there? Are there some best practices that haven't been implemented, or is it really, is each one unique?
Each one is, a different story generally.
Mm-hmm. When you go into those situations, is your approach to try to turn them around different also, depending on what you see, or are there some best practices there that you run into?
We've we want to turn them around, right? Sure. Obviously. So what we do is we bring our diverse set of skills to the table. So often when we're coming in into the middle, maybe something that hasn't worked well, or we're up against some barriers to getting things implemented well, I'll just use overseas as an example, we may have to bring a lot of different skills to the table and say, hey, what's the best approach to moving this ahead most efficiently and effectively? You might start out with a very broad experienced team and then, you know, kind of pare that back as things get on an even keel.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Kathleen Flanagan. She's President, Chief Executive Officer of Apt Associates. And you can hear this conversation at federalnewsradio.com later today. Back in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Do you hear that? That's a satellite 500 miles above the Earth. And no, you can't hear it or see it, but it's there. With Raytheon technology that's helping to predict the weather, monitor our climate, or capture images of our planet. A lot of Raytheon solutions are actively at work in much the same way. Unseen, but unmatched. After all, when your mission is space, the possibilities are infinite. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's a zettabyte. The amount of data the world generates every 6 months. 5 times more data than the combined storage of every hard drive on Earth. In a sea of data this huge, Raytheon Cyber Solutions deliver security, efficiency, and resiliency. After all, when your mission is cyber, every bit matters. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
Hundreds of thousands of furloughs and cuts to every agency program. That's the reality if sequestration goes into effect on March 1st. Will Congress and the White House be able to reach a deal to avert the $85 billion in cuts this year? Will federal employees be able to survive the one-day-per-week furloughs? And how hard will industry be hit? Federal News Radio is your source for the most up-to-date information on sequestration. Find it all at federalnewsradio.com/sequestration.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kathleen Flanagan is my guest of Apt Associates. And Kathleen, you talked about toward the beginning of our conversation about some of the other places where your company works. You mentioned some work that you do with governments in Australia and Great Britain. And I'm curious about how that's different. Working with those governments is different. Working through their processes and procedures is different than what you experience when you work with the United States government.
One of the things that we found as we branched out and started working beyond the U.S. borders is that USAID in particular, as a foreign assistance organization, was almost a role model for the U.K. and Australia. Those governments tended in the past to think about assistance programs as direct aid to governments, to missions. USAID thinks about it less as direct aid and more about capacity building and setting up project and project offices. The UK and USAID are now moving in that direction, and so it's very much like what we're doing with USAID. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, we thought when we would go outside the borders, we'd find a very different model. And the emphasis of all three organizations now is something called value for money. It's really making sure that there's a return on taxpayers' dollars.
Do they use the same measures that you're using here? Do they ask you to come in and bring the measures that you use when you work with USAID?
We're learning new ways of thinking about how to measure value for money, and we also are asked to bring our experience base, obviously. So they're not asking us to reinvent the wheel, there is a big emphasis on what they call monitoring and evaluation. So again, looking at value for money and looking at the programs, how they're implemented, and are they resulting in the outcomes that were intended.
Do they want to see the same kinds of things that USAID wants to see, or are they looking maybe with a different set of eyes because they're from a different worldview?
No, I think it's very similar. And again, I think all three are taking up, increasing speed on the focus on monitoring and evaluation and value for money.
Mm-hmm. So it's a constant process of demonstrating, here's what we're doing, showing benchmarks and so on.
Here are the results,
yeah,
yes.
All the time. How long have you been working with the organizations in England and in Australia?
We've been working with the UK aid organization, DFID, for about 5 or 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
We just made an acquisition in Australia in the last couple of weeks, so we're just new to the AusAid market.
So in the UK market, though, you've been there for plenty of time to see that trend line developing,
right,
and see it accelerate more toward a convergence with what you're seeing in USAID. Is that fair to say?
Fair to say. And also, they have really, again, picked up the intensity of every single program must show evidence that there's value for the investment dollars made.
Do they have the same strategy to go and review? I mean, it's fine to look at a program and see if it's working well or not. When it's not, it's sometimes difficult, even so, to cut something loose. Do they have this, the same kinds of measures to do so and the same willingness to do so that we see here, or does that look different?
I don't think we have enough experience yet to know. They're feeling the same budget pressures in the UK.
That's why I asked
here
the question,
in the US.
Yeah.
So my sense is that over time, they'll have to make some very tough choices,
mm-hmm,
but they're looking for evidence to be able to help them,
yeah,
make those choices.
The kinds of projects, same kinds of projects that you work with them?
Yes.
Same?
A lot of health system strengthening, a lot of infectious disease. And in fact, a wonderful thing to see in a number of countries is a real partnership between USAID, the British government, and increasingly the Australian government, but other donors coming together, leveraging their funds and,
mm-hmm,
saying, hey, what are we going to go after together?
Now, does that give you some latitude when it comes to maybe making those connections? Is that your role, or do the aid organizations communicate with each other and then you come in as kind of an add-on?
So our role is as an implementing partner of the,
mm-hmm,
program, but when you're overseas, it's a small community, and folks share experiences and learn from each other. So it's almost natural to bring those groups together.
Mm-hmm.
And in places where it works well, it's very gratifying.
Do the other countries have the same attitudes about building the local capacity that the United States has? Is it pretty much the same?
I think
standard?
That's where the USAID has been a leader. I think again, their experience in the past was more in direct aid to the countries, and now they're seeing the value in building local capacity and leaving in place very strong initiatives and programs.
I want to go back to the agencies that you work with here in the United States. We've talked a lot about USAID. What are some of the other agencies that you're working on programs with right now?
Huge piece of our portfolio is HHS broad. So we work with CDC, the Center for Disease Control, SAMHSA, mental health, on mental health and behavioral health issues. We work for CMS on health policy and a number of programs focused on long-term care and Medicaid and hospital quality,
mm-hmm,
et cetera. Department of Education, Department of Labor. We're in a lot of agencies. I think the only ones that we don't do a significant amount of work in is DOD. That's about it. Do a lot of work with the Veterans Administration and returning and active duty.
That issue, the returning and active duty vets, or the returning vets and connecting them to communities around the country is something that we've talked about any number of times on the program. And one of the challenges that we've heard a lot about is just helping vets explain what they've done when they've been in service to a potential civilian employer. Mm-hmm. Are you working in those kinds of transitions too?
We are. We're working in the health space on post-traumatic stress disorder and how to reconnect active duty military folks with their families in the communities when they're suffering from PTSD. We also work on prevention strategies to homelessness, and then connecting vets to work opportunities.
Mm-hmm. The homelessness issue is a big priority for VA right now. What's the trend line that you see in progress there? Is that a problem that appears to be headed in the right direction?
I think there is a huge commitment by the VA, but also Housing and Urban Development and the Department of Labor to collaborate on solutions to homelessness for this group. Very impressive, stepping out, breaking down silos across those agencies and saying, hey, we need to work together.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been working on a similar solution. Let's leverage that. Let's look at best practices. So that's a very important program for us, and we've been really enjoying working across those agencies on solutions and targeting, and I think there's a lot of progress being made.
And then that's really difficult because each of these agencies has its own culture and its own way of talking. Even just the language that they use to describe something can vary from one to the other. What's driving that success, not just in that particular area, but any place that you see across government where one agency is communicating well with another agency to be able to do that silo breaking that you're talking about?
I think it starts right at the top with the leadership. I don't know if you've noticed in the Post, there was an example with the Secretary of HUD traveling with the head of the VA and going out on the streets to talk to homeless individuals. It starts with role modeling right at the top. The Department of Housing and Urban Development has really been at the cutting edge of thinking about how to measure homelessness, how to connect services within communities. And the VA said, why should I reinvent this wheel? Let me collaborate there. And I think, you know, again, I applaud the leadership of those agencies and being willing to leverage the best that each of them has to offer.
Now, one suggestion that I've seen when it comes to we've heard about restructuring agencies and realigning them, moving capacity from one to another, that kind of thing. It strikes me that a lot of that might not be necessary if we can find more good examples of that kind of collaboration. For example, it's not necessary for the HUD part that works on that issue to move to VA as long as they're able to work well together. Do you foresee a time where that becomes more common? Because it's probably not fair to say at this point in time that it's very common that agencies can operate outside of those silos very well.
I think the motivation for it will come with the budget crunch, mm-hmm. right? That the leaders within each organization is going to have to look for ways to leverage their dollars, and that requires building those bridges and collaborating more effectively. And where we've seen it work well is in instances where more resources than any agency has is required to solve the problem most effectively. So they've had to reach across to another agency and together.
And be willing to cede a little bit of turf to do it. I mean, that's
sharing leadership, sharing oversight, sharing outcomes. We've seen it work well.
My guest is Kathleen Flanagan. She is the President Chief Executive Officer of ABD Associates on Industry Chatter today. We'll wrap up our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is In Depth with Francis Rose.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Looking to make a career move in technology? Start your search at PowerJobs.com, the new career site made for Washington's top talent. New on PowerJobs.com this week.
Tax Manager Deloitte, Chief Architect Northrop Grumman, Senior Strategy Policy Advisor AARP, Communications Director Luntz Global,
Apply for these and other leading positions today at PowerJobs.com.
PowerJobs.com. Finally, a career site made for you.
Here is Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, from the panel discussion, The Federal IT Challenge, IT Reform, Where Do We Go Next?, brought to you by VMware.
The CIO, the CFO, and the CPO working together within an operational framework. And actually, the enterprise architecture methodologies of the Clean Air Cohen Act were intended to do just this. They were intended to accomplish that alignment underneath the major objective umbrella of what is the intended mission outcome. The execution was less than effective in doing that. And that's why I go back to say that in the private sector, you know, those business objectives are very clear. Where I have had success in the government, such as at the patent office, was where the objectives from the top, in this case the undersecretary, were extremely clear.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Mythics Consulting is hiring. Mythics Consulting is an award-winning Oracle Platinum specialized consulting partner working to enable the Oracle-powered enterprise. And Mythics Consulting is looking for IT professionals that get the job done. Available positions include leading Oracle solution areas like applications, enterprise content management, and big data. Mythics Consulting is the go-to Oracle systems integrator with open positions and ready to hire high-skilled IT professionals. Check it out at mythics.com/careers. That's mythics.com/careers.
Exhausted from exhaust? Car horns ringing in your ears? Do your brakes need a break? With the D.C. metro area recently being named the worst traffic area in the country, it's no wonder so many of us are overworked with getting to work. Join Mobile Work Exchange to take back your commute and pledge to telework during Telework Week 2013. Pledge to telework March 4th through 8th and get off the roads. Visit Telework Week at mobileworkexchange.com/telework week for more information.
Future chemotherapy treatments might have fewer side effects by taming cancer cells instead of killing them. Cancer cells thrive and rapidly multiply in their microenvironment, the biochemical mix in which tumors bathe. But Jennifer West, a Duke bioengineer, says in lab experiments,
if we provided them with materials that would mimic a normal microenvironment, we saw that the cells really behaved like normal cells. This gives us some new targets for potential therapeutics.
West says instead of a chemotherapy that kills cancer but other cells too, causing many side effects, it might tame a tumor cell to become,
if not a completely normal cell, at least a very much less aggressive cell.
And prolong patients' lives. To find out more, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Kathleen Flanagan's my guest from Apt Associates. We talked on and off throughout the course of the program about what your company does, and it strikes me, and we talked about it a little bit before we went on the air, you're not a typical government contractor the way that people would think of a government contractor. You're not really involved in IT at all, and so on. How does that differ? How does that make the way that you approach the federal government to do business with them different, do you think? Does that impact the way that you do that at all?
Well, Apt is a mission-oriented company. Our mission is to improve the life, the quality of life, and the economic well-being of people around the world. So the work that we do and the mission impact that we can have is our number one priority. So we're privately held. We strive to be financially healthy, but we don't have to dance to the drumbeat of the quarterly earnings or Wall Street. That provides us with more flexibility, I think. It allows us to attract some incredible people who care a lot about the mission and have a real desire to have an impact in people's lives. So it's what I call our secret sauce, the mission element.
What is the workforce environment like now, recruiting and retention for the kinds of interesting things that you do?
We're a people business, so it's here in Washington, in particular, and overseas, it's competitive. There's a lot of folks out there doing what we do. I think our ability to attract just top-notch people is the secret sauce. It's the mission. It's not having to say to them, hey, we may have to give up on the quality of our work, or we may have to pass on some very interesting projects because we've got a quarterly earnings target that we've got to make for stockholders.
I continue to be fascinated by the kind of the dichotomy between the job numbers that we see and the leaders like you that say that it's a really competitive market for the right kinds of people doing the right kinds of things. Is that anything that you expect to change? I would think as the economy improves, that will get even more challenging.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've grown tremendously over the last few years at a rate of 25 or 30% per year. So we're just adding tremendous numbers of people. So, you know, we want the right fit. That's a priority for us. And once we get the right fit, we want to retain them. So I think the challenge will be to make sure we're developing people, that we're giving them the right opportunities to grow, and that we're retaining folks as well as being able to add and recruit. So as things tighten a little bit, we want to make sure we can keep the best and brightest in our workforce.
If you and I sit down and have this conversation 2 years or 5 years from now, where would you like to see the company, and where would you like to see your relationship with the federal government in that time?
I think that we've become more and more global across the last few years. I've noted that we've added a customer base outside of the U.S. as well as broadened our customer base within the U.S. So I just see that evolving. We're a federal contractor. You know, the government is our client base, but I think we'll just broaden our global reach and continue to do the great work that we're privileged to be able to do for our clients.
Kathleen, I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Happy to do it. My guest on Industry Chatter today, Kathleen Flanagan, the President Chief Executive Officer of Apt Associates. Our conversation will be posted later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.